This is Inside Open Wheel with your host, Jeremy Scott.
From the TrackOn Multimedia Studios just outside of Chicago, this is Inside Open Wheel. Hello, everybody. I'm Jeremy Scott. A little bit of an off week, but that doesn't mean that we lack on the content. Coming up here in just a little bit, Gustavo Yacaman is going to join us. He's had a lot of drivers that have had success in F4 this season, so we'll talk more a little bit about that. Devlin DeFrancesco from Andretti Steinbrenner Motorsports over in IndyPro 2000. He's going to be joining us as well. This is his first season in IndyPro 2000. We'll talk a little bit about that as well as his unique sponsor. Then following that, we'll have Dan Anderson from Anderson Promotions talking about the decision last week to restart Indy Lights for next season. And last but not least, our driver analyst Charlie Ante joins us to talk about the news of the week. So you can always follow us on Twitter at Inside Open Wheel. Find us on Facebook by typing in Inside Open Wheel. Have a question for us? InsideOpenWheel@gmail.com. Also, you can leave a voicemail on our voicemail, 815-714-9260. A couple of news that came out today. Marco Kasich will be joining HMD Motorsports for the FR America's season finale. The 17-year-old Canadian will complete the HMD Motorsports four entries this coming weekend at the Circuit of the Americas. So it's great to see HMD kind of stepping up involvement. Hopefully that means that they're going to continue running in FR Americas next season. I know there's been talk that HMD is going to go back to Indy Lights. We'll have more on that just a little bit later on. Also, Alliance Racing driver Will Holtz has a new sponsor. It is Linear Edge. Now, if you don't know what Linear Edge is, they have wall decorations that are shaped like racetracks. So almost any racetrack you can think of, they will make it for you. Really neat. We'll definitely have to get Will Holtz on the show a little bit later on. Joining me right now is Gustavo Yacaman. Now, if you remember, he used to run in Indy Lights as well. He was also had the Crepes and Waffles sponsor, but he's kind of stepped back a little bit from that. And Gustavo, thanks for joining us. I know that your past couple of seasons have been kind of off and on with being behind the wheel, but you're seeing a lot of success bringing drivers up to the junior formulas, and one of them just clinched the F4 championship.
Yeah, it's been interesting for sure. We all know that racing, at some point, you either have a lot of talent or a lot of money, and I guess I didn't have both of them or either one of them together. So, you know, I started the Academy Winter Series last year. It was basically started from the idea that it's always very hard to find proper testing at real tracks for all these junior open wheel series. It's very expensive to rent these tracks like Sebring, like Homestead, like Austin at COTA. And as just one team, it's very hard for them to go to them. So, you know, with the numerous years that I had in open wheel racing in North America, I pretty much knew everyone that I had to know. And I slowly put it together with the support of some great teams that I had raced with before, with Junco's Racing, with Cape Motorsports, people that I knew from racing, like Jay Howard. I raced against Jay back in my Indy Lights days. And then some new people that really joined in and really liked the idea, like Dan Mitchell from Velocity Racing Development. So, you know, thanks to the support of all of them, we were able to put really good test days together where the kids not only got a really good amount of track time, but because there were more cars, they had something to chase, right? They had a carrot in front of them. So that was really good. And throughout all the test days that we had some guest sort of driver coaches, if you like to call them that way. So we had some European friends of mine that came around and helped me coach all the kids. I was coaching myself, helping out. Some of the bigger teams had like Jay and Dan, they have their own coaches, but some of the smaller teams, they can't afford them. So that's where we came in and kind of helped out those kids that were running with the smaller teams with a little bit of coaching support, and that was all included in the track time. So so yeah, it was very cool, and I had been doing a lot of coaching with gentlemen drivers, and I was kind of needing a little bit of a fresher atmosphere, and I just enjoy working a lot with these young kids, watching them go, especially the really young ones coming out of karting, going into cars. That transition has been really fun for me to work with, seeing all these kids with a smile from an F4 car in a USF 2000 car. You know, takes me back to when I did my first laps and how cool that was and how cool that felt. So yeah, I've really found something that I really enjoy, working with these kids and watching them have great success, like Stingray Rob winning the championship with Junco's Racing this year. Junco's, any day in the winter series, they didn't do any other testing outside of that. And also Hunter Yeaney winning the F4 championship with BRD. He was part of our testing program.
And you're also having a winter series kind of with, you know, in the off season 2020, 2021. And look at the schedule. There are two race weekends, but what's interesting is you have test days later on the next couple of months. So it almost, correct me if I'm wrong, but it almost has a feel of like a Lucas Oil Racing School or Skip Barber, but it's for drivers looking to either improve upon their F4 USF 2000 racecraft, or a driver who wants to come up to karting into formula cars.
Yeah, so it's like a little bit of a mix of both. I think because there is the professionalism side brought along with the race teams that they run with. So I don't own any cars. I put together the event and they come with their teams and with their own cars. Okay. So this brings a sense of professionalism to the kids, and it basically simulates what environment they're going to have during the race season. So with a Lucas Oil or a Skip Barber, you know, their mechanics are not the people that they're going to use during the race season. Their engineers, the way they work, all of that is not the way that they're actually going to do it. Those school series are run completely different to a professional team that is going for a USF 2000 championship or an F4 championship. They were completely different. So this sort of way of doing things gives the kid a really good sort of icebreaker with the race team that they're going to race, of how they work, how they like to do things, and sort of make the mistakes early on before you start the actual championship. So it's really important for the team and the kids to really connect and use that time to bond and learn how to work with each other to get the most out of it. And especially for the kids that have never raced, it's very important for them to practice standing starts for our Air 4 boys. You know, that how many karting kids go from rolling starts their whole career in karting to, oh my God, I'm sitting at, where was their first race? I'm sitting at Mid Ohio on a standing start, and I have never done a starting start in my life, in my first ever proper race in a formula car. Like, what am I going to do? So imagine how a 15, 16-year-old kid is freaking out those 5-10 seconds prior to their first ever standing start. So much information has gone through their mind. I got to drop the clutch like this. I got to hold the brake. I got to be on the power, but not 100% on the power. I don't want to blow the engine up. All these numerous things are going through their mind. And all of a sudden it goes green and they stall it.
Yep.
Right? So the opportunity of getting 6 standing starts before the first race for a kid just coming out of karting, going into their first year of formula season, is just invaluable. You can't put a value of that. Just having that under their belt, having safety car restarts under their belt. We did 2 simulated safety cars throughout the races in the winter series. So practicing that whole procedure, having that already dialed in, just all of that is just of really great importance that you can't really put a value to once the flag goes green for these kids.
Now, with the Winter Series coming into coming closer and closer, do you have all your events sorted? Because I know that, you know, NASCAR kind of threw a wrench in everything with, oh, we're doing Homestead Miami is our second race.
Yep, everything is sorted. I've got the days already confirmed with Homestead. We're waiting on NASCAR to give like 100% confirmation on their dates. And that might shuffle little things here and there. The Sebring day stays the same. So it's either we race at Homestead on the scheduled date if NASCAR doesn't do it, or we race at Homestead the Thursday, Friday prior to the Sebring race. So it's really no big deal. It shouldn't change a lot as far as the calendar for our boys. So that shouldn't be too much of a drama, of a change.
And how are we looking with car count with drivers for this Winter Series?
I'm confident that in F4, we're going to have anywhere between 15 to 20 cars. I'm thinking about capping the car count at 20.
Okay.
I don't know that I want more than 20 cars in the Winter Series because it's just more manageable and controllable. And I get to have enough one-to-one time with all the drivers there. And I think that that's important for the value of the whole series, being able to give everyone the right amount of attention. And we're also working with some teams to put together an FR Winter Series.
Oh, wow.
So we're waiting to see what happens with the schedule and what the new owners and promoters are going to want to do. So, yeah, we're waiting on that. So depending on whether the series goes to California or not, I think we could have a potential Formula Regional Winter Series as well. And it should be very interesting to attract a lot of European drivers since the Kiwi Toyota Gazoo Winter Series is not happening with international drivers. It's just going to be Kiwi drivers. It leaves a lot of European guys looking for something to do in the winter. And, you know, who doesn't want to come to Florida for a week or 2 weeks in the middle of February?
Well,
so
that sounds like fun, actually. Well, and not to mention, too, you talk about capping the F4 field at 20 cars. Coming up from karting, that's got to be a good thing because, you know, you see the fields in F4. If you're not used to huge fields, you know, with bigger cars, it could be a little mind-bending. And 20 is just that right number to where you said, yeah, you can work with these guys one-to-one, but you can also, these drivers will have enough space to where, you know, yeah, they can make a mistake if it happens, and they won't have to worry about, you know, running into another driver.
Yeah, I mean, mistakes are going to happen, and it happened last year with, I think we had 12 cars. And it still happened. They're going to make mistakes, right. And it's part of the Winter Series. I want them to make all the mistakes they're going to make in the Winter Series. I don't want them going out and making the same mistakes all over again once the Summer Series starts. I want them to do all those mistakes and learn everything in the Winter Series. And we go over all those mistakes together with everyone in one room. We get everyone's on board from the winner to the last, and we just review everything from race starts to racecraft to racing line to data. We just review everything together. And some meetings are optional and some meetings are mandatory. So, for example, the racecraft meetings are mandatory. Everyone needs to come. And then the driving sort of aspect of it is option for, like I said, the smaller teams that have less of a budget, that can't afford to have their own driver coach, they come over and we review. We get the fastest lap of the day from whichever team it is. We have the onboard. We have the data. We don't give it out to anyone, but they can review it with us if they want. So it's sort of part of the deal of coming to the Winter Series. You have to relinquish your fastest lap and on your video and your data, so we can sort of help the other kids improve. But like I said, we don't give it out to anyone, so no one has access to it on their own. They only have access through all that data with us.
Oh, that's pretty unique. Before I let you go, though, I've got to ask this question. Hunter Yaney clinched the championship last round. Do you know if he's going up to FR Americas next weekend or if he's just going to try and finish out the season in F4 Coda?
Well, I'm not sure. I know they were trying to get Hunter approved to run in F3, but I think that the series just wants him to finish off in F4 and start with a clean slate in 2021 with the F3. So I'm not sure what they ended up putting together and agreeing in the series with, but I know that that's something that they were thinking about.
All right. Well, Gustavo, once the winter series gets rolling, let's definitely let's talk more about that later on with the drivers. We'll preview it. We'll follow the races. We'll cover it for you guys here, so at least we get some sort of coverage.
Awesome. I would really appreciate that. And we'll keep in touch. And it was a pleasure spending some time with you on the show. I really appreciate it.
It's great. You know, I have to say it's great hearing that somebody's looking forward to these kids going from karting to open wheel, and they've been watching your Instagram and, not only did y'all see your bike rides, I'll admit that, but, watching work with these kids at Homestead Miami, the different racetracks around South Florida. So, and watching you during Indy Lights, you're doing a great thing for these kids. And, I know they really appreciate it. Gustavo Yakiman joins us on Inside Open Wheel. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you in a couple months.
We'll stay in touch. Take care.
Up next is Devlin DeFrancesco from Indy Pro 2000 in the Andretti Steinbrenner race car. Next on Inside Open Wheel.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
There have been so many good drivers in Indy Pro 2000. It's been hard to sit down and really talk to them all, but one of them who's currently second in the points going into St. Petersburg has 2 wins, 6 podiums, 3 poles. It's the Canadian driver, Devlin DeFrancesco. Devlin, thanks for joining us. I've got to say, this has been really a great first season for you in Indy Pro 2000.
Hi, Jeremy. Thanks. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, no, I mean, honestly, it was very last minute going in, but the team have done a fantastic job. You know, I won an Andretti Steinbrenner. I've done a top performance, I'd say, all year. We just moved forward as the year went on. We learned together, and from the start of the year to where we are now, we've made big steps. So very happy with how the season's gone. I think it's been a very solid, good first season. And hoping to end with a bang at St. Pete with 2 good results.
And you've already had 1 practice session at St. Pete. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. But I've got to say...
No, I actually haven't.
Oh, that's right. You guys did not get on track. That's right. That's right. That's right. That's
yeah,
right.
It was... I only have 1 day of testing before the season started. In mid Ohio, so
that's right.
St. Pete will be a new track for me.
I was gonna say that whole weekend is a blur because my wife and I were supposed to go down there and watch some practice here in the area. And I looked at her when I heard on Thursday that they weren't limiting fans. I go, that day ain't gonna finish all the way through. And unfortunately, I was right. But I've got to say this: you're running for 2 of the most famous names in American sports, Andretti and Steinbrenner. That alone has to be pretty neat.
As I said, it's an unbelievable opportunity that's been given to me, you know, by Michael and George. You know, I first met George at last year's Indianapolis 500 2019 and discussing future plans. And, we talked about it. And then once the pandemic hit, you know, everything sort of changed, and we decided as a group that coming back to the States was the best route for me in my career and my future. And to have someone like George Steinbrenner and Mike Andretti in your corner and being able to drive for such a great team and organization is a blessing, really. It's honestly a blessing.
And I want to talk about your sponsor at the end of the interview because it's a really unique sponsor. But going through your history, you have quite an awesome resume in the terms of you drove a little bit of everything. You started off in the Ginetta G40 in the 2015 Kickstart Energy Ginetta Junior Championship. And for those who don't know, they're what the English call tin tops. It's a competitive series. So you go from karting into the Ginetta G40s. Was that your thinking, that you know how competitive this is, so might as well give this a shot?
Well, actually, I broke my wrist quite early on.
Okay.
So I had multiple surgeries on my wrist, because the original plan was to do Formula 4. But we did Ginetta Juniors with HHC, which were a very, very, which still are a very, very good team in that series. You know, to learn tracks, learn all the British tracks for Formula 4 the next year. And, you know, race a car and everything like that. You know, coming from karting, all very new. But definitely it was a very competitive series. You know, the grids were very tight. You know, qualifying was separated by hundreds for 2 to 3 positions from memory. So, no, it was a very good, strong series. And, you know, definitely elevated me as a driver. Definitely a good series to start in, that's for sure.
And we saw that next season on how it helped you out in the F4 British Championship. Took 3 wins, 10 podiums, a pole, and a fast lap. Granted, they're two. How different is the G40 compared to an F4 car?
It's completely different. You know, it's you know, the Ginetta G40 is something on road tires. You know, moves around a lot. You know, compared to a you know, single seater Formula car with aerodynamics, slick swings, things like that. But you know, to learn the tracks and you know, to work with a good bunch of people, you know, to learn, you know, the basics in car racing, I think is very important, and that's where my first steps of learning were, that's for sure.
And you also dabbled in some ADAC Formula 4, the German Formula 4, and Italian Formula 4. With being in the Europe area, or I should say being in the Europe bubble, per se, that's got to make it easier to know that, you know, yeah, you can run the Italian championship, but, you know, take a day's drive or whatnot, go across the continent, and essentially, and, you know, run another series the next weekend.
Yeah, no, even now, looking, you know, I still follow all the, you know, all the ladder, Formula 4, Formula 3, Formula 2. I still follow, you know, I have a lot of friends over there in F4 still. And it is definitely probably the most competitive F4 series, the German and the Italian one. You know, 30-plus cars within 1 second, within sometimes even less than a second. So definitely a very, very competitive series. Again, great, great for learning coming out of karts.
You know, we've heard that a lot from a lot of the drivers who come overseas and, you know, they run in the road to India, they run in the F4 championship. They say that the European ladder system helps them develop because of the competitiveness. And we see that, the, you know, next couple seasons you run F3, you run some GP3. But one thing that stuck out at me was in 2017, you ran the Macau Grand Prix. What is the experience like of being the... you know, be one of the headliners for a race weekend, because that's really one of the first times that as a driver you get to headline an international race.
It was really cool. You know, I consider it as one of the coolest tracks in the world. You know, a long, ballistically fast street track, you know, ultra low downforce, and doing, you know, 180 miles an hour in a bumpy, tight street track, you know, as those. Something very, very enjoyable, a special experience, and I think something that's going to help me definitely in St. Petersburg this weekend on the, you know, going back to a street track, you know, after driving in Macau in an F3 car. I think, you know, being able to comfortably drive there at a good level, I think St. Petersburg will be fun, that's for sure.
As I say, at least you don't have to go from, like, you know, 4 or 5 wide width streets into a narrow alley at St. Petersburg. We'll talk about that a little bit later on, but you also have some IMSA experience running in the Daytona Prototype International class. That has to be fun, racing at night for the first time, though, too.
Yeah, the first time I went there, honestly, it was a bit of a, you know, a whirlwind, you know, very different type of racing. You know, I've been very, very lucky to race a lot of different categories, classes, cars over the years. And definitely some of the most enjoyable racing I've done is in IMSA. You know, having to share the car with 2 other drivers, very different process. You know, looking at a, you know, a total stint time rather than being fast over 1 lap, sprint racing, which is what I, you know, what I'm generally accustomed to. You know, having the opportunity to work with, you know, drivers like Austin Cindric, you know, comes from a very different discipline of racing, but, you know, a very respectable guy and quite a talented driver as well. You know, always learning from things from different people, and definitely helps me move forward as a driver in my own right.
And not to mention, too, you've got to watch out for other cars because it's multi-class racing. And, you're lucky that you're not in like a GT where you have to watch both front and back. You're just watching out front.
Yes, no, exactly. You know, multi-class racing with, you know, LMP2s, GTDs, GTLMs as well, you know, through the night, mixed conditions as well. You know, hugely enjoyable, though, and can't wait to go back, hopefully, quite soon in the future.
All right, let's talk about St. Petersburg, and with it being your first street race since Macau, what work have you been doing to get used to having to be close to the walls? Because most racetracks you go to, you just got to worry about, okay, you know, I shouldn't drop a wheel. You drop a wheel at one of these courses, that's the end of your session.
Yep, no, for sure. You know, I've done a lot of work with All In Sports, you know, have helped me over the years. Anton Stepinovich is the guy's name behind that, who's been with me for a number of years now. You know, they've done all the sims for all the top junior teams over in Europe. He was an ex-engineer for Ferrari, McLaren, and Red Bull as well, has vast amount of Formula One experience. So when I came back over to the U.S., he was already expanding into the U.S. from Italy. So, you know, I have one of his simulators in my house, which I drive every day. And he has a simulator center here in Coral Gables, quite close to my house, that has all laser scan tracks and perfect vehicle models as well. So I've done plenty of days on the sim there with him for St. Pete, and had, you know, a meeting with my engineer, gone through data, video, all those sorts of things from previous years.
Just teased a little bit your sponsor. I've got to say, it's one of the more unique sponsors that I've seen on any race car. It's the, I guess you can say, the Onion, one of the Onion racing sites, WTF1. If you've never been on WTF1, it is a fantastic time waste. I love those guys. How did you get connected with them?
So that actually came through Engine Media. Torque Esports, which is now Engine Media, who have ended up acquiring WTF1, who ended up becoming the title sponsor for part of my season. Now it's Kamoa. But, you know, WTF1, you know, hilarious site. They cover very, very high amount different disciplines of motorsport, and hugely entertaining. And they cover some great stuff.
Yeah, that when I first saw that, it's like, no, that can't, no, it's got, yeah, this is WTF1, yeah. Because I've known about that site for a while, and it's cool to see that they're finally branching, quote unquote, branching out here into the States.
Yeah.
Because it's just funny F1 news. That's all it is.
It's hilarious, you know. So many drivers and even people I know outside of racing pass their time, you know, going to their site, watching their, you know, their videos.
Yep.
Matt Gallagher is a hilarious guy.
Oh, yeah.
Met him quite a few times. And, you know, grateful to have them on the car this year and for the support they've given me.
And, of course, you also said you have Kamoa on your side pods now. That's got to be cool to be linked up with Formula One world champion Fernando Alonso.
No, 100%. You know, their products as well are really cool, I have to say, especially the sunglasses and T-shirts. You know, to have someone like him, a company that he has on the side of my car, is definitely honorable and rewarding. So it was nice to get some results with his company on the side of my car.
Well, how can fans follow? Well, before we end this interview, I got to ask. Been asking a lot of these you guys on the path into full professional racing. Where do you want to go after this? Are we thinking about Indy Lights next year? Are you going to stay in Pro 2000? What's the future look like for you?
The plan is Indy Lights for next year. You know, very excited to see that it's going ahead. the plan next year would actually be, you know, Indy Lights, and then IndyCar after that, regarding things go our way, and the results are there.
Well, Devlin, how can fans follow you on social media and keep up with your progress?
I am on Twitter and Instagram, Devlin DeFran. You can definitely follow me there, Facebook as well. And all the links to my races for the live streaming are on all three of those platforms.
Devlin DeFrancesco, the Andretti Steinbrenner driver from in Indy Pro 2000. Thanks for joining us. And once you get that Indy Lights ride, let's go ahead and circle back and talk about it.
Definitely. Thank you so much, Jeremy.
And speaking of Indy Lights, no problem, anytime, man. And speaking of Indy Lights, Dan Anderson from Anderson Promotions joins us. So we're going to talk about the big announcement that was made last week here on Inside Open Wheel.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
One of the casualties of the 2020 season due to the pandemic was Indy Lights, but some good news came our way last week. If you remember listening to last week's edition of Inside Open Wheel, driver analyst Charlie Anthony and I both sat down and discussed the good news that Indy Lights would be back. And we have one of the men in charge of bringing back the historic series. It's Dan Anderson. Thank you for taking some time out of your busy day. I know you're really hustling around to get everything ready for next season, so it's great to sit down and actually talk to you.
It is a busy time, but I'm more than happy to be on. Thank you.
All right, let's talk about the big news. As we said, Indy Lights is coming back next year. Talk us, if you can, real quick, talk us through the process of sitting down with Roger Penske and making sure that the series will be back and more bountiful for next season.
Well, Roger's a very busy man, and we finally got a chance to sit face-to-face. I've gone back and forth with a number of his people prior to the Mid-Ohio round of the IndyCar season. But we sat down on both Saturday and Sunday for extended sessions with my staff, his staff, Roger and me, and just talked through how we can make this return and make it return strong. And I believe Roger's behind the Indy Lights program and the entire Road to Indy program. In fact, he understands the value of a development program. And there are challenges. None of us knows what the beginning of next year is going to look like at this point. There's still concerns about the coronavirus, how far into next year it will go. But we agreed that it was time to make a firm announcement that it was coming back, and we would take some steps, not everything that I wanted, but we're taking some steps to improve the program and make it better. And I think the interest has been very positive.
Now, since the announcement came out last Wednesday, are there any new developments we can talk about regarding next season?
Well, my staff mostly, but we have contacted the drivers that were intending to run this year, and I believe all of them are coming back to run the year that they thought was going to be 2020, but now they'll be in an Indy Lights car in 2021. We have interest from drivers in Europe more so than usual at this time of year, actually. We have the graduating class from the current Indy Pro 2000 crop of drivers. So all in all, the announcements will come as teams decide to announce them, but we have double digits of committed drivers, and I'm hoping that we see fields of 12 to 15 at the season races next year.
That's a fantastic.
It's always been a struggle. Mm-hmm. The economy is never helpful. A lot of factors weigh in on drivers and where they decide to race. The exchange rate has never been our friend with attracting European drivers to come over to the U.S. But I think the addition of the halo is a positive for a lot of drivers worldwide. It's become the norm, and we decided it was time to do that. So that will be done in January and February before we open the season at St. Pete next year.
And I want to talk about the halo, because we see IndyCar has a windscreen, which in essence has a halo, but I believe it's plexiglass in front of it. Why and with the amount of ovals that you guys run with IndyCar, why move to the halo instead of the windscreen?
We felt that Tony Kottmann is the man in charge of a lot of this, and he's very in tune with the technical side of things and with what IndyCar did. We felt that for our level of racing, the addition of the full aero screen introduces cockpit temperature issues, tear-off issues. We don't do pit stops, but yet we run, in some cases, longer stints than IndyCar runs when they run their pit stops. So there were a number of reasons. Cost was a significant reason. The aero screen on an IndyCar is 3 to 4 times more expensive of a retrofit than the halo is on our car. And at our level of racing, this is what we felt was the right choice and is more than sufficient.
And we know that the windscreen does create a significant shift in the center of balance with the Indy cars. How much of a shift will this cause for, with it being titanium, how much of a shift will this cause in the Indy Lights cars?
Well, we chose the titanium to keep the weight down. There was a steel option that would have reduced the cost even further. Dallara has worked very well with myself and Tony Kottmann on designing and developing the pieces that we're using and the installation methods. And the titanium will help us reduce the increase in car weight. Tony Kottmann doesn't believe it will be a significant increase. There will be probably some changes in setup that teams may experience when they're going testing, which is why we wanted to definitely get it in the team's hands in January so that they can be ready to go in early March.
Are there any other car updates outside of the Halo that will be coming to the Indy Lights cars this year?
I don't believe so. I think we're pretty much set. And with this upgrade, I mean, the Halo is an upgrade that includes strengthening of the tub as well. The teams have to bring their tubs back to Dallara at Indianapolis. And it's not just the hard points that are being installed for the Halo attachment, but there's some other tub strengthening that has to be introduced to the tub to make it a structural strong piece. You can't just bolt the Halo on top of a tub that isn't also strengthened. So it's a good design and a good program. But other than that, no, the engine is pretty much flawless. The last 2 or 3 years, it's been bulletproof. In the early years of this particular package, we had some issues with engines that got sorted out by our good friends at AER. And for the last 2 or 3 years, there's been pretty much zero complaints. Sorry for my dog.
You know what? But with everybody working from home, I've heard some of my co-hosts on some of the radio stations I work on, you would hear the dog in the background. So that's nothing new. Dan Anderson joins us here on Inside Open where we're talking about the Indy Lights return for next season. I want to get back to the drivers for next year. We do know that at least Andretti Autosport told Marshall Pruitt in a Racer.com interview that that Andretti will have 4 cars next year. So we know of at least 4 cars.
They've got four signed drivers and they have the happy problem of having more drivers that want to sign with them. So Michael Andretti and I have talked about how he's dealing with the number of guys that want to run. So we'll make sure that a number of teams get handled. We hope to see some new teams on the grid, but nothing to announce yet. We're talking to some people and trying to particularly get some IndyCar teams involved. But some of our current teams, Exclusive Autosport, Bilardi Racing, Junco's Racing, HMD, they're all stepping up, and they seem to be ready to commit to full seats for all their cars.
That's fantastic, because we do have 3 scholarship winners participating. One of those is Linus Lundqvist, who won the FR Americas title, and as a result of that, he has to run with a Honda team, and right now the only Honda team that is in Indy Lights is Andretti. So if it's full in the stable, do we know of another Honda team from IndyCar that's going to bump up and maybe help out, like a Bilardi or a HMD?
I know more than I can say.
Well, yeah, we'll talk to our FR. No, we'll figure that out once we go down the road. But nonetheless, Parker Thompson and Stingray Robb are the other 2 drivers. Parker Thompson obviously winning last year's Indy Pro 2000 Championship. Stingray Robb, the most recent winner. So there's no shortage of talent that's going to be racing this year in this next year in Indy Lights.
Correct. correct. Stingray Rob has been phenomenal. There's a driver who has paid his dues for a number of years, and all of a sudden he got his first win this year after running 3 years with us. I think he had 49 starts total and won on his 50th start, and then he's been unstoppable. He's won, I don't know, four or five races since then. It's amazing. Great kid, great family. He will do well. And I don't know if he's going to stay with the Juncos team. Obviously, they'd like to keep him there. I know they're working on budgets, and I'd like to see Ricardo Juncos' team have a two-car team again, and Stingray would be a great anchor for that.
Now, we know that you're working on the schedule for the 2021 Road to Indy Series, but the big question, and this is something that my driver analyst, Charlie Ante, came out and asked about. Now, we know that you guys run 100-mile races on the ovals. You guys run longer stints in the Indy cars, but is there anywhere down the future where pit stops may be incorporated to help these drivers when they get up to IndyCar?
Something that we've kicked around casually over the years, something I would actually find very interesting if we could figure out how to do it. The only pit stops we could ever do would be tire change only, because the minute you go to fueling, you go to fire suits for the whole crew and you jack up the cost for the team. So we've kicked around the idea of doing extended runs with tire changes, but I don't see that happening for 2021, but it could happen one of these days.
And with the losing of a couple of ovals, is the plan just to do maybe two ovals this year? Because we know that Indy Lights does not run at the Texas Motor Speedway.
I would think that we will have two oval races on the calendar this year. Certainly no more than that.
And looking forward to the rest of the Road to Indy schedule, obviously this coming weekend, we end at St. Petersburg. What are we looking at for the next season in US F2000 and Pro 2000? Are we looking at increased fields as well now knowing that Indy Lights is going to be there?
The fields have grown, and the coronavirus hit us pretty hard, actually, this year. We ran full seasons with Indy Pro and USF 2000, but we had to cobble the schedules together with the loss of, first we lost COTA, then Toronto, then Portland, then Laguna. I mean, we scrambled quite a bit as promoters to put together a season that ended up being 17 races each, but it was a challenge. It hurt car counts a little bit. We expected to be in the 20 to 25 range for USF this year and in the 18 to 20 range for Indy Pro. We started that way. We fell off a bit towards the end. But yes, there's a lot of interest. We've actually got a number of new teams looking to jump into USF. I know Roger Penske is testing drivers under his diversity program in a USF 2000 car. And, I expect to see that program on the grid, whether it's in a Penske car or a Penske-supported car. I expect to see that happen as well.
And speaking of Roger Penske, I know early on in this COVID-19 pandemic coronavirus, there were rumors that he said that he wants to make it a condition that if you are an IndyCar team, you have to support or run an Indy Lights team. How much truth is there to that rumor? And if it is somewhat true, how close are we to seeing that being a reality?
We have discussed that. I know Roger would like to do that at some point. Couldn't happen for next year. Maybe the coronavirus and all the economic challenges teams are having entered into that. I'm not really sure, but I know that was a discussion. Roger has several ideas he would like to implement in Indy Lights at some point down the road when IndyCar goes to a new car. We've had talks about using the current IndyCar chassis not a scale back version, but a more inexpensive version, maybe reduce the cost of some of the attachments like wings and reissue them as Indy Lights cars. That won't happen for several years more, at least because IndyCar is not changing cars for several years more. But we've had those conversations, Roger and I, and I think the Leader Circle program is a good idea. I'd like to see some change in that, but that's beyond my pay grade. That's something that the IndyCar teams are affected by, and Roger and IndyCar have to decide when the right time is to introduce that.
Well, I got to say, between I've watched you run the road to Indy for a decade, and seeing what you do with your staff is incredible. Between, you know, growing USF 2000, growing what was then Pro Mazda to now what it is today, the Pro 2000, and taking Indy Lights to where it is today, and increasing the top three budgets to test. Dan, you've done a lot with a little, and I think I speak on behalf of all race fans and say thank you for making the sacrifices and making sure that we have a proper feeder series to get drivers to the IndyCar series.
Thank you very much. I've got a great staff. Kudos to them on every level. Race control, tech, PR, all the aspects of what Anderson Promotions does is due to the team. And if I've done anything right, it's assemble good people in all those categories.
Dan Anderson, thanks for taking some time. We'll let you get back to planning next season.
Thank you very much. Appreciate being on.
Coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, driver analyst Charlie Ante and I break down the news of the week here up next.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
And as always, we bring in our driver analyst Charlie Ante to take your dessert and digest it for the week, so you're full for next week. We've got a big show next week. You're definitely going to want to be full, and Charlie doesn't even know who I'm interviewing next week, so you'll find out later on. You did get a chance to listen to the interview with Dan Anderson, and I want to get some of your points that you have, because as I was going through the interview, I'm like, I wonder what Charlie would say. So what are your thoughts on what he's proposing, you know, not just next season, but beyond?
Well, I think one of the interesting things that stood out to me is the idea that they're working on getting every IndyCar team to support a Road to Indy team. Mm-hmm. That's something that I've kind of bounced the idea around in my head for a lot before. And I think the one thing that I always get stuck on is that it doesn't seem like there's that much incentive for an IndyCar team. I mean, the benefits for an Indy Lights team are pretty obvious. But I don't really see a whole lot of benefit for an IndyCar team to spend that much money.
I guess from what I've understood, the way that, and this is something that was said in Rob Howden's interview with Dan Anderson right after the announcement was made, Dan made the point of, you know, they have the space, why not have the cars? But you know, here's the thing, how many Indy Lights teams that aren't Andretti Autosport actually own the car? They're in a situation where they lease the car from somebody.
Oh, well, I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
No. I'm just saying, you know, I'm trying to make sense of this all.
Do they lease it from an IndyCar team, or do they lease it from a private individual?
My understanding, I don't know. That's something that would have to be research on. A great pet project for you this off season.
I have nothing but pet projects right now.
Oh, don't you love that? It's better than honey-do lists, I'll say that much.
Yeah, pet projects and video games, that's how I spend my time right now.
All right, so that's something we'll look at a little bit later on down the road. One thing that I found interesting, I did pose the question of pit stops, as you heard, and they're open to it, which is good. And I like the idea that, yes, they would do tire changes, because you're adding an undue cost to these teams if you introduce pit stops, because everybody's got to be in a fire suit.
Yeah, I thought that was another interesting thing, that he was concerned about the cost for the pits, or for the refueling, which makes sense.
Yes.
Also, I think that I'm not super familiar with the Indy Lights cars to this degree, but they may have to entirely redesign the fuel tanks in the cars, depending on how they're designed, because you need that large coupling on the side of the car. I'm not sure that the Indy Lights cars have that. But he didn't seem all that concerned, because I mean, if you introduce tire pit stops, you're doubling the sets of tires that the cars are using in the race. And I would think that that's a fairly significant cost, because I know at least in the road to, or the Pro 2000 level and below, probably one of the single largest line items in a team's budget is tires. So doing something to sort of willfully increase that budget, it's surprising that he didn't seem to think that was such a big deal.
Okay, they work something out with, you know, Cooper tires.
Yeah, I think that'd be great. Also, I think that it would be best if it were like IndyCar or Formula 2 or Formula 1, where they have two different compounds and they require that you to use one of the two during the race, or both of one of each. It's a sort of, because the F2 races are interesting because they do that. And so you have some teams that, you know, start on the soft tire and then they pit early. And then in the middle of the race, you have like part of the field is on the soft tire and part of the field is still on the aging harder tires. So you have this kind of disconnect. And then you have the teams that pit early are catching the teams that did not pit yet because they have the better tires as the race goes on. And then the cars that pit later, they go in the pits and then they come out with fresh tires. And so, and sometimes pitting early is the right call and sometimes pitting later is the right call. So it makes the races more engaging to watch as well.
Another thing that I found interesting that I didn't even think about is it goes back to this, you know, IndyCar team collaboration. If they collaborate with each other, you know, you can repurpose some of the parts on the Dallara IR18 and use it for the Dallara IL15.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. I wonder how much crossover there is. That never really crossed my mind, to be honest.
No, but I'm interested to see how this Halo will work, especially on the two ovals that they primarily run at, IMS for the Freedom 100 and the Worldwide Technology Raceway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he mentioned that they're probably going to do two ovals next year. So I think that he pretty much confirmed that those are the two that they're going to be.
Right.
I would be interested to see what exactly they're doing to the tubs to strengthen them. That's not something I'm super familiar with, but it would be an interesting article to read on Racer or Race Car Engineering.
That'll be interesting. Also, I can say this, from what it sounds like, Linus Lundqvist has signed on with Andretti Autosport. I'm not confirming it. I'm not spreading rumor, but the way that Dan Anderson sound is he's already signed. So
it sounds like they're going to have at least four cars, maybe more.
They did confirm that in the Racer article with Marshall Pruitt. I have heard rumblings of a couple other teams. I can't confirm those teams just yet, but 12 to 15 does sound like a very good number for full-time teams. I wouldn't be surprised if we see more than 15 next season, especially because you already have three scholarship racers. Once again, that's let me grab my notes. That's why I write this stuff down, because I lose my mind. So you got Parker Thompson, Stingray Robb, and Linus. Actually, Kyle Kirkwood, I believe, is the one that won. I'll have to go back and check, but I know that those three are set for next season. So it's interesting to see how many drivers could be coming up. And yeah, I have heard rumblings that there are a lot of European drivers looking to come over to run Indy Lights next year. So yeah, 15 is a very good number, I think, for next season.
Yeah, I think that'd be great, especially since it's been sort of sub 10 for quite a while. So to take a year off and then come back with 15 cars, that would be really great.
Some interesting news that came out of the world of Chip Ganassi over the past week. Felix Rosenqvist is going to be leaving Ganassi after the St. Petersburg Grand Prix and going over to Aero McLaren Schmidt Peterson, taking the vacated seat of Oliver Askew. Now, for those who haven't been following, Oliver Askew was released from AMSP for a couple of quotes in an article with AP's Jenna Fryer. And one of them was from him. Another one was mostly from his management company. We have reached out to his management, Askew's management company, for further clarification. Long story short, the article was about Askew's injury and how, what I gather from the article is how his management team felt that the race team handled the injury. Okay. They made it sound like as if, you know, after the heavy hit at the 500, they put Askew in the car for Mid-Ohio and Gateway. Askew wasn't feeling himself, so he went and got a third opinion. IndyCar said, after that opinion, you're not running because you just don't feel right. We don't want you behind a wheel. And as you know, Charlie, those cars are pretty powerful. And I think that the Schmidt Peterson PR people saw that, and that, you know, Schmidt-Peterson just let him go. You know, that's what it sounds like to me. And we know that this team has had a history of letting drivers unceremoniously go because of decisions that the drivers make that they don't like. Yeah, that's any team, though. But it's interesting to see a driver that they tout as the future unceremoniously being let go. And they, again, it's a team's prerogative. And I know that some people are going to be pissed off by me saying this, but it's a little odd seeing that. Go ahead.
I mean, that article certainly made it seem like they let him go because he wasn't performing due to a concussion,
right?
Which is, you know, if that's the case, then it's really not a very good look.
No.
But I'll be honest, I haven't been following it that closely, so that article was sort of where all my information is coming from. So it's hard for me to give a sort of an unbiased opinion.
And
or even a well-educated opinion.
No, and I don't disagree. And, you know, I'll be bluntly honest with you. The first time I heard about that AP article was in the comments section of it was Racer. Yeah, Racer.com. So it was in the comments section of the Racer.com article that I read it in. So I did.
You are a brave man.
I am a very brave man.
The comments section of any part of the internet.
Well, yes, you got to understand, I work in news, so I'm used to it by now. Takes me a trip to the liquor cabinet, grab some sauce, sit down, partake, and then have some fun. So, but no, in all seriousness, I feel bad for Oliver, to say the least. Mm-hmm. He showed signs of brilliance, but as I told some friends, the only way Felix Rosenqvist is going to do well is if he has Craig Hampson on the stand. That's the only way. We know where Craig Hampson is, and that's in that five car. But regardless, that's not diminishing Pato O'Ward's talent. The kid, we've known he's been talented since day one. But I don't think Rosenqvist can succeed in this seat. I want to be proven wrong because he's a hell of a talent. But I think moving over to Ganassi is not the right move. However, there is one driver who I think is going to benefit from this, and it's good old seven-time Jimmy Johnson. Today he tweeted out that he is, quote, dialing in his new office today. Also on the Reddit, the Reddit headline, it was liked by a good friend of the show, Ryan Eversley. So Rye Bear taking some time off of taking some time off the racetrack and actually liking that. But nonetheless, I've got to say this. This move can only help Jimmy Johnson because now NTT has a car that doesn't have a driver. You put Jimmy Johnson in for the road courses. You put Tony Kanaan in for the three oval tracks. Done. There you go. You have a star-studded lineup in that car.
Yeah. I think the last I heard, it was still dependent on Jimmy Johnson bringing money to the team.
Right.
So I guess you're saying that this opens up a seat for him, a funded seat.
Yeah, I think this opens up a funded seat for him.
Yeah, it would be good. I think it's a sad state of affairs when a seven-time NASCAR champion has to bring money to a team. Jeez.
Yeah, it really is.
I thought IndyCar had sort of passed those days. Like, well, 10 years ago, yeah, sure. But anyways, yeah, I mean, that would be great. I think that's a good move.
Yeah, no, so it's a good move for Jimmy. Unfortunately, I don't know. You know, I've been proven wrong. That's why I'm an analyst. I'm not thinking, well, that's why I talk about this stuff. I don't drive in it. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the next couple months. Now that Jimmy Johnson's getting fitted into a seat for another test, we'll see what happens. You know, this is going to be an interesting next couple of months. As I jokingly said on Twitter, I want off the silly season ride.
Yeah, well, it's a good distraction for everything else that's happening in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. So, also real quick, IndyCar is losing a closed wheel car series. It was just announced today that the Global Mazda MX-5 Cup Series will be sanctioned by IMSA, which is a right move. They're going to start their season at the 59th Rolex 24 at Daytona. So it'll be interesting to see the MX-5 Cup cars beat and bang against each other on the Roval over there in Daytona Beach. We'll see what the rest of the schedule holds, though. Nonetheless, Anderson Promotions will continue to manage that championship on behalf of Mazda which started.
Are they still pulling in gigantic fields?
Yeah. Oh yeah. They're pulling in. Oh, what was it? I can't remember what the last one is, but it was a pretty good size field, like in the mid-20s, I think.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That sounds like a recipe for chaos at Daytona, but bring it on.
So, you going to run it then?
well, I would if it wouldn't cost me, like, what, $20,000?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, you can find ways to bring in $20,000.
Yeah, but the easy ways are risky for my general long-term freedom.
As I say, you're not a fan of the John Paul Senior School of bringing in funding?
I mean, no. I'm not a very good liar. I would be a terrible criminal.
Oh, yeah, I can see that. Yeah. All right. So coming up next week, we are going to, Charlie, we've been talking about one promoter the past several weeks and how to bring in oval track racing to more IndyCar races. So we're going to sit down with Chris Blair and actually talk to him about how he does it. Why does Gateway or Worldwide Technology Raceway fill butts in their seats? How do they do it year after year after year?
So I take it he's the promoter for Gateway.
He's the general manager. He's the guy who puts the butts in the seats. So we're going to find out how he does it.
Yeah, that is something I'm very interested to hear.
Yeah, because I mean, Gateway, it is a racing city, to say the least, because they've had that drag strip for God, as long as Route 66. But it, you know, it's within drive from Chicago, Kansas City, Indianapolis, the Paducah, Louisville market. So we're going to talk to him about that. Plus, we're going to preview the races at St. Petersburg in Florida. I'm excited because we finally get a street course race this year. Oh.
Yeah, I love street course races.
Oh, it's one of my favorite races. And some of my favorite places to go to. I've been to a couple of them, and I've loved every one of them. I still say the best one has to be, best one that's not Toronto that I've been to has to be Detroit, just because of all the neat food options you get there.
I think I went there in like 2008 or 2009.
Right.
And so it's been a while. I don't really remember the food. But I do know that at St. Pete, it's like the track is like a block away from downtown.
Yep.
There's some really good restaurants like a block away from the track. So
that's what I've heard.
I always look forward to going down there.
Yeah, hopefully we'll get to go down there next year. We just got to find some funding. So you might have to do those illicit activities to get our $20,000 for the season. All right.
Can siphon off a little bit to the St. Pete travel fund.
All right, well, that does it for Inside Open Wheel. Again, it's a later edition. We had some hiccups throughout the week, but nonetheless, we're here. We'll get back to you earlier on in the week next week. So until then, I'm Jeremy Scott with Charlie Ante. We want to thank Dan Anderson, Devlin DeFrancesco, and Gustavo Yakimin for joining us. Take care, everybody. Be safe. We'll see you next week.